Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to She Started It with Angelica Malin, the podcast that celebrates incredible, inspiring women who are at the top of their industries, from food to fashion, law to politics. This is a podcast about celebrating female entrepreneurship, power and potential, exploring what it really takes to be a trailblazer in today's world. I'm your host, entrepreneur and journalist Angelica Malin, and every week I'll be asking a new guest for their three career turning points and answering the question we've all wondered at some point, how did she start it? She Started It with Angelica Malin is kindly sponsored by Bloom & Wild. If you're like me and you love having fresh flowers around you while you're relaxing at home, but I hate having to carry them around with me all day, and who's ever home long enough to arrange a delivery anymore? Bloom & Wild have got us covered. They're the UK's top-rated online florist, and they deliver right to your letterbox. So you can get fresh buds, ready to flower, they can last up to 10 days, and you don't even have to worry about being home for the delivery. They'll give you £10 off your first order with the code SHE. Straight and simple, S-H-E. They offer free next-day delivery up to 10 p.m. They ship across the UK, France and Germany, so they've got you covered. So head on over to bloomandwild.com, use the offer code SHE so they know I sent you, and treat yourself. So I'm joined this week by Karen Gill. Karen is the co-founder of Every Woman, the membership organisation that seeks to advance all women in business by increasing their number and raising their status in the economic community. Every Woman's ambition is to become the world's largest and most influential business network, inspiring generations of businesswomen to achieve their own ambitions and helping organisations realise the full potential of their entire talent pool. Prior to founding Every Woman, Karen had an international career as a vice president for Intercontinental Hotel Group, working across Asia and EMEA?
EMEA, Europe, Middle East and Africa.
EMEA. And together with Every Woman co-founder Maxine Benson, Karen was appointed the MBE in 2009 in recognition of her service to women's enterprise. And in 2017, the government's Women's Business Council recognised their outstanding commitment to the advancement of women in business. Absolutely amazing. And a topic so after my own heart. Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you do now?
Yeah. Okay. So we are having our 20th anniversary this year, which is quite incredible. As you can imagine, you know, there's been a lot of difference in this particular area over the past two decades. But the work we do now is really sort of building momentum on taking the whole area of, around women in business and making sure that it touches every generation and that everybody can participate, both men and women, in the advancement of women, because still the landscape's pretty poor.
Well, it's amazing that you've been running the business for 20 years and you must have seen so many changes in that time, because I feel like women in business has really boomed in the last kind of 2-3 years, where it suddenly became female entrepreneurship, everyone was talking about it, everyone was doing events, but you must have seen that change so much over the years you've been running the business.
Yeah, it's kind of been, was very, very uphill. It was like pushing treacle uphill. And it was hard because it was, you know, we were banging on doors and wanting to engage the business community. And they were very sceptical, both men and women. A lot of very senior women were very sceptical about being engaged in that conversation, didn't want to be seen to be singled out because of their sex. Whereas now, actually, everybody, and based on the fact that we now have evidence and research that says there is significant difference in the way that men and women interact at work, engage at work, and what motivates them in their careers. And so I think today we're at a point of knowledge and good knowledge based on research. And I think that it's a complex subject because it's not one generic thing that you can say if the world did this, women would have a better time at work or find it easier at work. It's a very complex issue.
Interesting that you said that there were senior women who were also quite opposed to it. Why do you think that was?
Because they didn't want to be, they didn't want the achievements and what they had achieved and the success that they had, I guess, belittled in any way, or belittled, not the right word. They didn't want to be singled out as the reason that where they were was because it had anything to do with their gender. There was also a belief, you know, Thatcherism and all of that, this programme on TV about her at the moment, that anybody could be successful as long as you had the bravado and, you know, you went at it the right way, which actually I think most people know we're not all the same anymore.
Yeah.
And so therefore what's easy for one person is not necessarily easy for another. Mm. And unless you were in that kind of able to adopt that alpha male type of persona, it was very, very difficult.
Mm, mm, interesting.
For both men and women, actually.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, both men and women. So I'd like to rewind a little bit and come back to your early days and before you launched the business. I asked all my guests in advance to provide me with a few turning points, which sometimes can be quite hard when you're looking back to work out what it was that led to where you are now. But could you tell me a little bit about the first one that you chose?
So I think the first turning point in my career, I fell into my career, as a lot of people do. I was just, you know, I was travelling around the world. I ended up in Australia. I got a job as a reservationist at Intercontinental Hotels. There was no forward vision for me about a career. It was a job. And then I actually quite liked it. And then I found actually I was quite good at it. And then I got promoted. I got into the sales and marketing part of the business. They were building a new hotel down there at the time, which was an incredible project to be involved in. And then the woman that I worked for wasn't particularly great at her job. She was the national marketing manager. And so we were out with her boss, and I just happened to say, I think I should go for that job. And he was very taken aback. I think I was 24 years of age at the time. And he said, you know what? I think you can have a shot at it.
Yeah.
And so I guess it was just putting it out there and just seeing what happened, and it did. And then, of course, it was like, oh, God. And that's really when I started to think, gosh, you know, I'm quite good at something. I love what I'm doing. I love who I'm working for and where I'm working. And I'm going to take this a bit more seriously. So that's when I kind of, it was the first turning point for me.
Have you always been quite ballsy when it's come to work?
Yeah, I suppose so. As a person, I'm quite... But I was very lucky. I mean, my mother was very brave. She started her own business in the early 70s. Quite interesting, because my father had to be the counter signature on her business account.
Really?
Yeah. So things have changed.
Yeah. For the better. And so then you took on that job, and then where did you go from there?
And then, I think there was a combination of things. And again, you often hear this. Obviously, I've met thousands and thousands and thousands of women and men who have had great careers. And you often hear that it's when that whole thing of luck meets with you being in the right place and doing the right thing and having the right mindset. And so, you know, being in Australia, Australia was on a real trajectory in terms of getting itself on the world map economically and as a tourist destination. I was working in the tourism industry. And I was just very lucky. I had fantastic people I worked for. Interestingly, I met up with my old boss. He's just turned 80. And I was able to thank him because he was an incredible supporter of young talent and really, really did nurture and look after and bring on and give people opportunity and took chances on young talent. So,
And how long were you in Australia for?
Oh, 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I woke up one day and said to my then boyfriend, I want to go, you know, want to do something different. I think it's time to go back to Europe. So again, put it out. That's the second turning point in my career. And
what did the then boyfriend say?
Yeah, why not? So he was also English. He's now my husband, 30 odd years. I just put it out there and said, I'm interested in work, staying with the company, but working in a different country. So they come up with New York and London, and it was easier for my husband to work in London because he was working in the financial markets than it was New York. So we chose to come back to London, which was great also because it meant I came back to my home and got time to spend, you know, with my family.
And what did that first job teach you? What kind of skill sets were you developing there?
The one
in Australia.
Well, Australia taught me a lot. Australia taught me even to be more ballsy. Australia is has an amazing culture in as much as they are not interested in where you're educated, where you were educated, how you taught, where you're from, as long as you work hard. And if you work hard and play hard, you're a good sort. And you're respected. And it was the first time when I first went out there, you know, you would be in social situations with people across all sorts of different backgrounds, professions. And I love that about Australia. And so that taught me that anybody could be anything. Which I guess gave me a lot of confidence.
Yeah. How does that landscape compare to here, do you think?
Well, at the time when I left here, I mean, we think politically it's in a mess now, but back in the late 70s, it was an absolute disaster, you know, with the three-day working week, strikes all the time, power cuts, you know, and it was, but the landscape was hard. It was hard to get on, or it was hard to get out of your perceived place of where you should be. So I left school, didn't want to go to university, went to secretarial college, and my future looked like being a secretary for the rest of my life. So yeah, that's how different it was.
Was that the culture you were brought up in? Like, do you think that that's what girls were told?
Yeah, oh gosh, very stereotyped career choice, and unfortunately I hate to tell you that it still is. We do a lot of work around, we have a charity called Modern Muse, and we do a lot of work, around getting young girls from the age of 11, and some, you know, even younger if you can, to look outside stereotyped career choice, because it's still, you know, careers advice, and especially, you know, the lower down the economic scale you are and the more you go out into to areas, you know, where it's tougher, the more stereotyped that is.
Well, I interviewed a fantastic girl earlier called Georgina Kirby, who studied maths and went on to create a health tech company. And she was saying that she felt like she wasn't encouraged to do maths. And when she got it wrong, she was told by the teachers, oh, you're no good at maths. And she was a six-year-old. And she said, how could a six-year-old be good or bad? I could have just learned. And her parents said to her, you know, keep trying with it. But I very early on gave up on maths because I thought that's not for me. And I now realise that's quite a gendered
It still happens.
Happenings. Yeah, definitely.
And it's really important because it's critical that girls get the same opportunity to study subjects that are going to be the careers of the future. Otherwise, you've heard about the gender pay gap and, you know, just the gender gaps there are in enterprise, in pay and in high paid jobs. That's going to get worse if we don't get girls encouraged to study those subjects.
Well, which leads us nicely on to Every Woman. So you came back to London, and then how did you get to where you are now? Like, how did the business start? How did you meet your co-founder?
So I came back to London, and I was having a great career. Sometimes I think, gosh, I can't believe I left it.
And in hotels?
I stayed with Intercontinental for 15 years. They were an amazing investor in their people. So I had a lot of training, did a lot of training programs and development work. So it was great. So I then had my son, which is a turning point for lots and lots of women. And realised that actually if I wanted to spend any time with him, then this career and where I was at the time is not going to work, because I spent every week travelling. You know, covered a wide territory. And my husband was working full time. So the decision was actually, well, I'll take a bit of a back seat for a while. And it was whilst on maternity leave. And I met lots of other women who were having babies, obviously, and that they came from a variety of professions, lawyers, accountants, all sorts of things that were all struggling with the same thing. And of course, it is really hard to remember the landscape back then because there wasn't the technology to enable flexible working. So flexible working didn't really exist in those types of jobs. So it is hard to imagine a life without mobile phones and email. So email had only just really come on the map in the late 90s. There was no such thing as texting on mobile phones. Mobile phones were just for making voice calls. And so we often say that technology has revolutionised women's lives, you know, in the sort of 90s, as the pill did for women in the 50s and the 60s, because it just enabled a much bigger, enabled more flexibility and choice.
And I imagine maternity leave must have been quite isolated and
awful.
Lonely, because you're suddenly
awful.
Totally out of a job rather than having any level of connection or, and that
community. I found it really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that many friends that were having babies at the same time. And, I can remember once pushing my son in the pram around a park, looking at all these other women sitting there having a picnic with their babies, hoping they were going to invite me to join them.
Really?
It really was very isolating.
Because now we have so many like apps for meeting
yes,
other mums.
Exactly.
One of the ladies I interviewed has started an app that allows you to find people in your area.
And yeah, fabulous.
All the stuff that exists now that just didn't. you know, a handful of years ago.
Yes, so it was whilst doing that, suddenly realised that there was this whole community of women that were very highly skilled. Because, of course, the other thing that has changed dramatically over the last 30 years is the age when a woman has her first child has moved by a decade from your early 20s to your early 30s. Mm. So you are having your first baby and starting family life, you know, having had a huge amount of experience in the workplace under your belt. And a lot of women don't want to just give that up. Mm. Or, you know, there are parts of work that they enjoy. And so that's why I think there was there's been a difference, and there's been a shift to women thinking, well, I'm not actually just going to be full time in the home. Mm. And that was when we sort of noticed women starting up businesses. Mm. And, you know, as a marketing person, I looked at that and think, there's a real increase in the number of women that are starting their own businesses. What's forcing that? Well, that's what was forcing that. And then, and how is that experience? And this, you know, actually what we really uncovered was quite frustrating, really, because they were, we always say, when we sort of tapped into what was around at the time for business advice, I was actively discouraged from starting a business by the business advisor rather than encouraged. You know, what was I thinking? You know, I just got a small baby. Could I read a balance sheet? You know, I'd run a budget of $60 million. You know, this is, yeah, I can read a balance sheet. So, so that's what, like, the idea popped. And Maxine, who I've known since we were in our early 20s, was living in New York. And she said, oh, God, we've got to look at this internet stuff. This is really fascinating. And I got online with my modem, crackly modem, and looked at woman.com and a few other female websites that had been launched in the States. Thought, this is really, really neat. And so that's how the idea for everyone.
And how did it go from an idea into a reality? Like, what did it look like setting up the business? What did the early days look like?
Well, the early days, I was a screaming child in a cot by the side of me, and just lots and lots of research around, did it have legs?
Here's a cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Actually, we did lots of focus groups, and it was like lifting the lid off Pandora's box.
Really?
And so we then sort of did a couple of sketches of what a website might look like, what content it might contain. And we went off with those boards, actually, and took them to IBM. And said, what do you think about this? And they said, yeah, it's quite interesting, actually, because we do quite a lot of work with female entrepreneurs in the States, but we don't in the UK. So we'll give you $15,000 to get it built.
Really?
So they were our first sponsor, and we still work with them 20 years later, which
That's
is great.
Amazing.
And so they, because they, as a company, have been very pioneering around all sorts of different diversity, but, you know, quite big around gender. And so we did our first, so we built the website, and actually, interestingly, was like, gosh, not a lot of people are coming to this website. And so it was IBM that said, you should do a conference. Let's hear what these women have got to say. So we ran our first conference in the year 2000, and it was just like, we couldn't shut them up. It was like, at last, somebody's listening to us.
Really?
And they all had the same kind of themes about where they were finding it particularly frustrating or challenging. Mm. And that's how the business started to go into events rather than just be a website. Mm. And actually, looking back, we were trying to create a social network online. in 1999 with a dial-up modem. And actually, most of the women that came to our first conference didn't even have an email address. Mm. So it was like we were a little bit ahead of the curve.
A little bit, yeah. So your business model kind of shifted with time based on what people wanted to do and based on where the energy was, I guess.
Exactly. So we did those all around the country, those events, and we got more and more companies that had an interest in the market of female entrepreneurs. I had an interest in the market of entrepreneurs, but actually wanted to know, was there any difference in female and male entrepreneurs? NatWest was one of those. We still work with them today very closely on their women in business proposition.
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe what they were hearing in terms of how they were getting it quite wrong. And so they were able to listen and adapt their service proposition and, you know, their products. And it was all a bit clunky in the beginning. You know,
yeah.
The little shrink it and pink it thing was going on. Whereas it's a much more sophisticated thing now.
Yeah, well, I recently did a campaign with NatWest and it was about women with imposter syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
All this research and I was part of that. And I think it's amazing that they are opening up these conversations and taking the data and then humanising it.
Mm.
When you first approached these brands to work with you, what was the response like?
That's an interesting question. So when we first approached NatWest, we met the head of business banking, and he said, we will never do anything specifically for women because we don't believe in discriminating or separating a service or a product out and adjusting it for somebody's gender. And of course, now they have an entire proposition that is specifically focused on female entrepreneurship, and we have been on that journey with them. So we run their women in business training there, and it's an accredited program for all of their sort of frontline business managers, men and women, so that they really understand the differences and gender behaviour difference based on scientific evidence around how women communicate differently, how they receive and respond to messages much more differently. Is that the right expression?
Yeah, I think so. You can go with it. Well, financial feminism seems to be the big thing now, where we're opening up conversations about money with women and realising that bank managers and financial advisors perhaps haven't been the best place to talk to women about money, and they haven't treated them with a huge amount of respect. I read a book over the weekend that's on financial feminism, and she said when she went to meet with a financial advisor, he said, "Where's your husband?" And that was last year. And it's like,
I know, that's horrific.
It's terrible.
That was last year.
I know. I mean, but these attitudes are still there. And I do think women perhaps find it hard to talk about money sometimes. And the fundraising side of business is a lot more of a challenge for women.
It is.
So we have a lot of work to do. What are some of the core focuses for your business now? What are you trying to change?
What are we trying to change? We're not trying to change anything. We're trying to continue to evolve the conversation, actually to really, really engage the younger generation, you know, so that they are aware of it much earlier in their career. Again, both men and women. I think the big change that we've seen over the last 20 years, apart from obviously the technology, which has afforded that flexibility I talked about, but the big change is men coming into the conversation and wanting the change because they can see the benefits for them, for their businesses, as well as their, their culture, in their businesses. We always sort of, you know, there's been in two decades, there's a lot of change. And so one of the changes, especially in corporate life, is that the CEOs of today have got the same ambitions and aspirations for their daughters as they do their sons, where that wasn't the case 20 years ago. Mm. It was still very much that the sons went and got the private education and, you know, got the focus on their career. So that's seen a change in the culture.
I feel like we've seen a lot of
talk about the evolution and men, and so I think what our work today is handing over the baton really of every woman, and our vision is every woman everywhere to you and to your generation to make it what you need to make it for equality in the workplace today, and I think men are very much need to be involved in that because they've got everything to gain from it too.
I know we've seen a real increase in women starting businesses. Have you also seen a huge increase in senior level women, or do you think there's still some way to go?
There's a huge way to go, but we've seen increase, and so it's going in the right way. But there is still a long way to go. And because you still hear stories like that. Mm. I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime.
And on the gender pay gap, what are some... I've spoken so much on this series about the gender pay gap with so many different people. What are some of the ideas that you have, do you think, will actually work to help us solve the gender pay gap? And what would you like to see the government, next government, do?
The gender pay gap, I think, has been a really great piece of legislation. Not because of the data, and you know, I know people are critical about how robust the data is, but because it took the focus, it's made people understand the difference between the gender pay gap and equal pay. And, you know, secondly, what it's done is it's put the focus into, it's about careers. Mm-hmm. And it's the careers that women are going into that's causing the gender pay gap, or the fact that they're not getting into senior positions as quickly. As men. And so that's the focus. So if you take companies like, we work very closely with Celebrity Cruises, fantastic organisation doing a lot of work around all diversity. And they've got a real initiative to get more female captains of their ships, because they know that's where the biggest gaps are being created, as are some of the airlines with getting more pilots, you know, female pilots. I think it's only 6% of the world pilots are female. Shocking. So there is a long way to go, but that's what I think has been great about the gender pay gap legislation. Mm. And I know that lots of other countries, you know, are adopting it. So that's great. Ireland, Canada. We're going to Canada in July. And, you know, going back to what's our work at Everyone Today? Our work at Everyone Today is to become really global. Mm. I have a real desire to create a really great global network for women, because I think it's really important to have a really great mixed cultural network.
Mm. What do you think about things like all female shortlists to try and alleviate the gender pay gap?
I don't agree with all female shortlists. I think there should be 50-50. I think what the recruiters should be doing, and what the companies, you know, that we work with say works best, is when they get 50-50. So they're working from a level flat playing field. And then, of course, it's the best candidate for the job.
Mm. Talk to me about the business and the realities of running a business like every woman. What's been some of the biggest challenges, and perhaps is there any particular moment that's been particularly challenging?
Every small business owner will tell you the same thing, that the challenges are just so multifaceted. And it's quite interesting, having had half my career being in a big corporate global organisation, to a very, very small business with 18 people, which is what we are now. And I always liken it to, you know, being on the seas in a great big liner, that you've got a whole crew and you've got all the expertise on board to get you to your destination. But if you want to turn around quickly, that's a very hard thing to do. Mm. And it takes a lot of effort to change and to tack. Whereas in a little business, you're like bobbing about in this little yacht that's getting smacked every which way from, you know, the liners when they go past and the waves. But actually, you can tack yourself out of trouble very, very quickly. Mm. And that's what I love about small business, actually. If you've got a very quick mind and you love creating and you love innovating, you can take challenges and spin them about and work out where is the opportunity. Where's the opportunity in this mess? Mm. But that requires a lot of energy. So I think most business owners will tell you, and when they've been in business for a long time, they've grown a business, that it takes an extraordinary amount of energy, because you're pulled in so many different ways. You know, one minute you're dealing with something from a legal perspective, the next minute a client may not be satisfied with something or something's gone wrong. No end of staff issues, you know, trying to make the right environment in a small business, and with not being able to give all the same kind of benefits is really hard. So you've got to think about how you make it motivating for the people that are working for you.
And how do you build up your emotional resilience as a founder when things go wrong or really big challenges? Does it help to have a co-founder? Like, how do you find that inner strength to keep going, keep having that
energy? That's an interesting one, because I think everybody looks at mine and Maxine's work relationship, or relationship, because it's holistic, really, and always say, how have you done it? Because we've known each other for 38 years and worked together, and we work as close as this. So we're working, you know, facing each other on back-to-back desks, and we have done for 20 years. And I think we are incredibly fortunate, because I know that there have been times when, you know, it's really got her down, and I've been able to be the booster, and vice versa. Mm. And, you know, over 20 years, we've been through some hell, you know, some times. You know, we've both lost our parents at, you know, so we've dealt with a lot of emotional stuff. And so we've been able to be a support for each other. I cannot imagine not having that. I cannot imagine being a founder and shutting the door and it's just me.
Mm. Yeah, that challenge of when you're alone in something, I suppose it's just you're bolstered by.
And I guess you've got your network and you've got your family and your friends, but it is great to have somebody that actually knows 100% what the issue is and what's causing.
I think because of social media, we're seeing a real advent in solopreneurs and people starting businesses on their own because they have all these tools at their disposal, which is amazing. But I do think that there is a real emotional side to it where you can start a business and then you're working from home and it's very isolated. And people perhaps don't realise the realities of what that actually looks like, this kind of Instagram vision of business, that it can be very lonely.
It can be very lonely, it can be very tough, and things just come out of the blue, not you know, how you expect it. So, you know, we've had some really challenging things happen with us. I think, you know, we've had fraud in the business. We've had all sorts of different things that you deal with. And actually, when you speak to other business owners, they've all had the same thing.
Yeah, legal things. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, what's going to happen today?
Yes, exactly.
The journey of life. So you were appointed an MBE in 2009. How did that feel? That must be a very proud moment.
Yeah, it was funny, really, because it was just out of the blue. It wasn't expected at all. That was a funny one with Max and I, because, of course, you got the letter, and I thought, well, I wonder if she's had one. Who's going to make the first call? Well, she hasn't. And actually, it was very sweet, because we went together, and we were called out, and they said, would you like to go and collect them together? And we said yes. It took us in some side room and made us do synchronised curtsying. And I was actually very, very grateful that we had the Queen. She was delightful. She doesn't do many of them anymore. She is one of my all-time heroes. Yeah, I guess so. I don't really think about it. I don't really think about it anymore. But at the time, it was quite special. My father was still alive and he came. And yeah, it's nice. It was nice to be recognised for the work that we had done.
Yeah. I think it's amazing that you have been doing this work for so long. I know I don't mean that sound patronising, but I think now we're seeing like all these companies popping up talking about women in business. Now every magazine's got their Women in Business Awards. And there's so much stuff that I sometimes feel a bit sceptical about because I think it's a trend and I don't think women should be fashionable. I think
you say that's quite funny because when we first started and we did a bit of consultation work with the government, they were putting together a strategic framework for women in business and they called us a theme. And I've never forgotten about it. And Max and I still say, oh, what, that theme? Oh, yeah, women, that's right.
Women,
the theme of women. You're right, we should not be a trend. And we've seen a lot of those trends come and go, actually, a lot of initiatives that come and go. And I think that one of the things that Max and I are so proud of is the fact that we started this because we saw a genuine need. And as we've gone along, we've become more and more passionate about it. And it wasn't a passion that we then started. We actually recognised that something needed to be done and we started to do it. But as we've gone on, we've become more and more passionate about it.
Yeah.
Passionate about it. And I think but you know what people know, they spot, they can see when somebody's on the bandwagon and just doing it for their own profile, as opposed to doing something because they really see something's unjust or they want to fix something.
Do you have any tips if people are thinking of starting their own awards, what's really worked for your company?
I think integrity. I mean, I remember resigning off a judging panel once because there just wasn't really any robustness around the judging. There wasn't really any integrity about it. It was just a money-making exercise. And I think and always put your shoes in the recipient of the award, you know, of the award. They want to, if you give somebody an award, they want to know that it's really been genuine. It's been given in recognition of genuine work. So, yeah, we're really proud of our awards. And our judging panels are tough, but rightly so. So we've got some of the world's best female entrepreneurs, Chrissy Rucker, the founding of The White Company, Kath Kidson, people like that are on our judging panel, and they are really thorough in their, you know, their research.
Yeah, make it real. Make it real, yeah. Amazing. Make it real, basically. Thank you so much for joining me. If people would like to find out more about you and the company, where should they go online?
Oh, easy, everywoman.com.
Fantastic. And is there anything coming up that you'd like to promote?
Anything coming up? Well, we've got lots of awards open. In fact, our awards for female entrepreneurs and NatWest Everyone Awards have just opened. We're launching on Thursday, actually. So I think my tip would be is always enter those awards. You might not feel ready, but you know, it's good practice anyway to keep writing your story and honing that. Because as a female, as an entrepreneur, you've got to be self-promoting. So that's always a good tip. But yeah, no, I think the other thing is just to get involved in the conversation and get involved in the community of women in business, because you need lots and lots of support as you go further and further into your career.
You need people around you, don't you?
Yeah, you need people around you. Mrs. May's just found out.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to She Started It with Angelica Malin. If you've enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to subscribe, rate and review. And you can follow me on Twitter @JellyMalin.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.